approval of the agenda as circulated. Moved by. Seconded. You got them, did you?
Who moved? I didn't see.
Dean and
okay, thank you.
Mr. Teacher.
Okay, thank
Herbert.
You.
Herbert. So moved and seconded. Any questions on the motion? All those in favor, raise the right hand. Against, motion carried. Looking for a motion, not a motion to approve the notes? No, just approval of the notes, a consensus by the group, notes from the last meeting. Everybody's okay with that? All right, thank you. Business arising from the minutes, 4.1 is policy MODL 036 amendments, code of conduct. And there is a document that was circulated separate. And Chris, do you want to lead us through it?
I can do that. So
okay.
I don't know if you want me to read it verbatim, but we can go down through. What was your, did everybody have a chance to read it over? Yes. And then we've talked about this at workshops with Lunenburg Regional, with a couple of times at this meeting and a couple of times through Lunenburg Regional. So it's been talked about for a considerable amount of time now, and this is kind of the end product. And so we do actually have a couple of things I just received from our solicitor on a couple of little changes he'd like to see into it. So when we get to those parts, I'll just discuss them in here. And then when we get ready to say whether we want to recommend it to council, we'll just, those parts will be added to this when we do that for the final version.
Can we switch?
All right.
Yeah, you can switch it over. So it's also on your screens there in a second in front of you, too, just to make it a little easier. So the chief officer is the department chief, deputy chief, assistant chief, or member of a fire, or acting as a fire officer of a registered volunteer fire department. Third-party investigator is a person who's qualified to or trained to provide investigative services following best practices, industry standards, and who is not directly connected to either the municipality or fire services. So that's
pretty straight. Then page 7.
I'll zip down here to that. I'm motionless, so I'm a little slower here. So code of conduct for chief officers at 12.1. So the code of conduct was established for clear standards for professional behavior for all volunteer fire officers, chief officers, ensuring integrity, accountability, transparency, trust, and respect within fire services and the community. Number 2, the code intended to guide decision-making, interactions, leadership actions. The code applies to all fire chief officers, deputy chiefs, assistant chiefs, and interim or acting chief officers. Number 3, the code governs conduct of chief officers during emergency response, training, administration, public representation, meetings, and interaction with municipal partners and the public. The code also applies to both on-duty, off-duty actions when those actions affect the reputation or functioning of the fire service. Principles of conduct. So the first one, 13.1, chief officers must operate transparently, avoid deception, and declare conflicts. Uphold truthfulness in reporting, documentation, and communication, and not misuse authority for personal interest. Do I need to read these all through? Are you guys okay with that, or let me just go through them? Okay, so the next one just talks about, you know, dignity and all those things. C is just how to behave in a manner that's, you know, trustworthy, basically. I'll go to where the changes are. So in 14B, it reads, a complaint is provided to a third-party investigator who will seek clarification as required to determine if a full investigation is warranted. And our solicitor asked, who will we be using for a investigator? Will it be someone separate, or will it be one that municipality has already used for code of conduct violations? And it will be who's already on the list for municipalities to use in those cases. So that's already a factor that we can utilize. And the next one is in 15. So the municipal clerk had one, and the solicitor had another one in 15.2. So The clerk said in the, in that one sentence there on 15-2 or on second, section two, a board must review and investigate findings and make an in-camera recommendation to council or whenever there is a breach. So recommendation, she said, should be changed to decision because you cannot make a recommendation in an in-camera session. Has to come out of camera and then you have to make a motion or whatever. So that's, she said that should be changed. So recommendation would be changed to decision. And then the solicitor said he would like to see it worded this way. So the board must review the investigative findings and may consult with the municipal solicitor. That's where he'd like to see there in that part. And then make a decision in the in-camera session. The reason he notes this is that while legal advice may not be needed for simple issues, if there's something more serious, you may need to ask for some decision on what that is from the legal standpoint. And the next one is in 16-1. And it's here, it says, it talks about, so it, and it mentions all the different things that if their breach occurs, you could have any of those things on your leg. So it could be an apology, corrective coaching or whatever. And he would like to see it so council knows that they would have the ability to pick one of those or several of those in a decision that was made on how they would deal with any kind of situation if it arose after the investigation. So here's how, here how he, here's how JC worded. Council may require the following word that would suggest change in the language. So they can have, they could require any one of or any of a combination of the following of those A, B, C, D in order to come up with a decision that would help them if they needed to have one or more of those. So those were the points that he had. I just want to verify there's no more. Those are all he had. So he had 14B. In 15-2 and 16-1, and then we had that one small one that the municipal clerk also had mentioned on the recommendation switch to decision. So those were the changes to the, yes.
I have a question.
Do I use my mic? Yeah, I should. Okay. So this afternoon in council, another councillor came to me and said that they were uncomfortable with the point here that says council will make final determination on breaches and corrective actions required. Can you just tell me why that is the best way to go about it?
So this is, I'll try it, and if I'm wrong, then maybe Alex can jump in. But this is my understanding of the reason why this is. So if it can't be, if the fire department is unable to deal with this kind of breach and can't come to a decision on what happens, and then investigator comes in and decides, yes, I need to do an investigation because it's at that level that I need to do one. He will do that. The board will then meet, and then the board will make a decision and then come back to council with a recommendation of one of these items or whatever it is. So there's no other real body that could make that decision other than council under this policy. So that's why it's in there that way. Am I wrong, or is that kind of how it is, Alex?
Your explanation of process sounded good. I didn't actually quite catch Councillor Hubley's full question. Would you mind repeating that, Pam?
Yeah, another councillor said that they felt uncomfortable with making the final determination. And I'm not uncomfortable with that, but I just want to know why that is the best, the best course of action.
Yep. The process mirrors the code of conduct that's in place for council members, the provincial system that's set up. So that's why it was structured in that way, and that there's an independent review to give some impartiality in terms of findings, but then the decision about what to do about that finding rests with council. So just like if there was questions about the conduct of a council member, you'd get that independent review through the investigation process, and then council itself would have to determine what to do. Council is the one that owns MDL 36, the policy that registers fire service providers. And so this process does the same thing, that it provides an independent look to confirm details and whether or not there's an issue. But then council has to decide what's the action that we believe needs to be taken to rectify this situation.
Thank you.
It's kind of like it's kind of like Council Hubie, like if there was another decision that had to be made on other areas that were mandatory registration issues, council would end up making a decision down the road if we couldn't come to an agreement with the fire department how to correct like pump testing or something like that. If we couldn't come to an agreement on how we could do that, and something came to pass that there was no agreement that could be reached, or they refused to do it, then council would end up having to make some kind of decision under this. So it's basically the same kind of policy, the way we'd have to read around it. So.
Anybody have any other questions of Chris? Yes.
Just wondering if this is also mirroring something that is in place in another area, in another municipality. I'm just wondering if this is in place somewhere else and if it's gone well, I guess.
So I really can't answer that question 100% for you. Some municipalities do things different than we do. And we work with our fire services, and we've met several times with our fire services. And this was actually discussed at one of the workshops we held. So we didn't hear anything negative coming back on this. They thought that, you know, this was something that would be worthwhile to have in place to ensure like these things happen the way they should. And that's my understanding, but I can't say for sure what's in other places. I know like the professional paid services, like in Halifax and CVRM would have those. And some of the counties that look after fire services in like a totality would have a different way of looking at things. But where we are just able to do things under the Municipal Government Act with this policy, this is kind of how we went at it. So I don't know what other areas are doing 100% now.
Long explanation.
Yep. If I could add to that, Mr. Chair.
Yes, you can.
So
Alex.
We are, Chris has pointed out the professional services have a different approach and different abilities because fire departments are more directly under the control, and the firefighters are actually employees. Cumberland County does have a process which is similar to this. What I would argue is an improvement over that, which we have adopted after consultation with the fire service, is mirroring that code of conduct approach that's in place for municipal officials, where you have a third party do an external review so that you have some level of independence in your investigation.
Yeah.
And then the other element that came back again as a part of the engagement with the Fire Services Committee and with Lunenburg Regional was that there should be some level of review that involves the fire service, which is why we have that board created, so that you get the at-large member, a council member, and a member of the fire service looking at that independent review.
Thank you. Any further questions?
We do have a motion.
Yes.
Ready?
Yes. We want to make a motion to adopt, to recommend this to council.
Approve the amendments to the policy as presented to include the new code of conduct. That's
so the motion would be that the Fire and Emergency Services Committee recommend that Municipal Council approve amendments to policy 036, Fire and Emergency Services, as presented to include new code of conduct provisions. So we need a mover and seconder for that. Moved. Seconded by Dean. Questions on motion? Question has been called. All those in favor, signify by raising their right hand. Against? Motion carried.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay, next item is item number 5, and I'll start, Dean, if there's anything else that you want to add, you can. An interesting meeting. We started off with our secretary resigning immediately due to had to have some surgeries performed or surgery done, and he's got some recovery time involved in that and looking to move on to other areas. And at the same time, the president indicated that he would not be reoffering at the annual meeting in May. So that was quite significant. And then we kind of moved on to the fire services modernization. And Chief Zink from Oak Hill went through a number of things. He participated in an online session, and he gave us kind of an update, and then we talked about FSANs and so on and so forth. So that basically was the content of that particular meeting. Anything else, Dean? Oh, okay.
Yeah, that covered it.
Yeah, that really sums it up. So, okay. Any questions on that? New business 6.1 is the annual registration package, pages 2 to 22.
So, I only added this because there was a couple of things we added from discussions in the past about having something in there for drivers, licensing and qualifications, and departments that have two deputy chief positions wanted a spot in there for putting that. So if you look at the page that's up there now, 5 through 7 used to just have a name of a member and the date of their membership. And now it has a spot in there for if they're authorized to drive, yes or no. And if they are, what class of license do they have? So if they're 5 with air brakes, they would have a 5 with that designation. If they're a class 3, they could put class 3 in there. Or just a class 5, they could put a class 5 in there. So I guess that's how we looked at doing that. Chief Mullick mentioned to me earlier that, you know, it doesn't really say what authorization meant. So if we put in there whatever they're authorized to drive, and then we'll see who has class 3s and what they're driving that way. So it would explain it out in that circumstance. So I think that'd be fine. When we go to changes form, it's not easy to do because Sandra has to go back into Word and manipulate it. And then if something changes, it jumps all over the place, and she has to transform it back into a PDF fillable. So it's not a very friendly way of doing it. But so there's 3 pages of that. And then on page 8, it used to be this, the page that I have up here now, it talks about the name of the chief. So there used to be one spot there for deputy chief, and then there was a treasurer, secretary, and commissioner, chair, if applicable. And then there's enough room there they could put their secretary and stuff in there if they want to also. But we added that second deputy chief because several departments have that now,
yeah.
Or an assistant deputy chief, and they can put their name and contact info in there. So those are the only real 2 changes. It's more of an information thing, and that's what the process will look like moving forward for that form. And now I have the fun job of filling them all back out again for this year's. And that's it.
So this doesn't require anything from us other than
because
it's cosmetic.
Yeah, it's not a real change.
An add of a change in a policy or something. No. So
like this is an add-on to the registration. So
yeah, just another box.
We can talk about this to make any kind of change to this part without yes. having to go to council for anything. But if we have to change anything on the monetary structure or anything like that, then it's got to go back and get changed.
Okay, Dean.
Chris, quick question. Just on the drive, and I'm all for this. Do you know of any other department that does driver abstracts? We've started doing that for all our drivers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a few that
every
do.
Year, every second year, we're going to we go up with a list every. So, like every so many months,
yep.
and we're
it's a good point. I've been some of the sessions I've been in when talk with this morning. I haven't heard them talking about abstracts and stuff like that, but I know it's been talked around the table in Lunenburg Regional, and I know there are departments that are starting to do it, and some that have done it off and on. But it's not very widespread, to my knowledge, that departments are doing that.
I'm surprised that the insurance companies hasn't asked for that yet.
Yeah, they have asked in the past for like drivers and stuff like that, who's driving and stuff, but. They haven't gone into it too detailed.
Yeah.
And I know the province is working on a class 3 driver's licensing program. They haven't really got to the nitty gritty, but I know they're in the process of talking with having some local people possibly that can license drivers that are trained in a program that they're going to come up with. So they have the okays from all the necessary partners. They just have to work through how that's going to look and how it's going to come out. So I know they're working on that in the background. So that would be a bonus for everybody that's having issues trying to get people licensed to that level.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. The next item is on page 23, and it was my item. And I guess in reality, it was was a result of the discussions at LRFES. I ended up attending session in Liverpool on the 22nd of January, and they the consultants that are going around the province talking about modernization of fire service in the province passed out a number of pieces of paper, and fire service transition was one of them. It was 3 pages to that, talked about the current state, future state, and transition needed. And they provided a modernization, a vision, and a roadmap. And I just, according to this, they have met with CAOs and fire service leaders in the municipality. I think, Chris, am I right in
that?
They are.
Yes,
they did.
They did.
I don't know when that was.
That
October of 25. Yes. Yes, they did say that. So I guess when I looked at this, and it started at the LRFES, that this was quite significant, and it was the first bits of information that really came out from a study done by FSANS. And I know that back last summer I attended a session in Amherst at the fire hall there, where they were just going around collecting information and so on. And a result of that was a document that you did circulate to the committee members here. I don't know how many got a chance to read it, but it is, those recommendations were taken for the province, but then it's taken much bigger jump. The fire service, including, you know, they're saying in a lot of ways that the legislatively, it's all changing. Municipalities will be responsible for fire service totally. And the acts of legislature that control some of them are being changed, meaning that no longer effective. Commissions is one of them, but I don't know where the Rural District Fire Act, I don't know where societies lies within it. So you can understand that the fire service people who have been seeing these documents and going to these meetings are quite alarmed at, you know, like, we're not really talking about it, but it's quite significant. And, you know, this committee, and I know, Alex, I can't see your face, but I know that this committee has always been, you know, we work openly with MODL on moving along things like this. This is huge for the fire service.
It's a download.
Pardon me?
It's a download.
It is, and it, you know, it affects towns far less than it does rural municipalities, because generally in a town there is a fire department. They've been in existence forever, and the town looks after it, pays all the bills, and blah, blah, blah. But the arrangement that exists in the municipality is far different, and Alex, a bit worrisome to us. All of our roles, whether, you know, whatever they may be within the system that exists, you know, they got this roadmap. Is the municipality got a roadmap as to, like, you know, they're saying that this legislation is going to be tabled in September of 26th, which really isn't very far away. This committee would have 3 meetings by then. And you know what that legislation really is, and it, from the documents that they provided, it even though they did not discuss the documents, they did provide them, and they were more interested in having a series of questions answered, that maybe because they're consultants, they were looking for some answers to some things that they felt would be helpful as they talk about governance, the training, implementation, and provincial roles and supports. And we all worked at tables and we answered those questions, and the consultants were happy, to say the least. And one of the consultants actually came to our table, and there were a number there from of our local departments at the table. And, you know, we were saying how we have a fire services coordinator that we actually, she was surprised, she's because not very many have them. And I said, we actually have firefighter insurance. And she didn't, that's amazing. She said that on a global basis, right? Like, so I gather that there are a lot of variances between what we do in the municipality of Lunenburg and what's done in other jurisdictions, other municipalities. And when I was in Amherst last summer, there was one of the people, the consultants, they came from Cape Breton. They were all over the province, but they came to come from Cape Breton, and they said to me that, or they said to the group that firefighters there said that in their fire station that they actually have to fundraise even to buy the gas for the fire trucks. That the municipality provides no funding. They do everything by fundraising. And I was kind of startled by that, because I live in a community that like we have here. I mean, we're pretty cooperative, and we you know, there is fundraising, but there's also, you know, distribution of funds in different ways, revenue generated from area rates and so on. And, you know, but that sparked my mind to think that how bad could things be in some places, because if you don't know about it and you don't hear about it, you don't understand that. And you know, they are gathering all these facts, and someone else at the meeting said, well, there's way too many fire departments. And, you know, my comment was, well, there may be too many, but really it's about response time, isn't it? Like, you know, you can't have less because we're community-based. I mean, you expect, there's an expectation to provide service within a reasonable time. So there's, but these comments get taken in, they're put into a study, and, you know, and one of the things that was in the study actually was another surprise to me when I read, you might want to pick the study up sometime, look at it. They commented on that workers' compensation wasn't in Nova Scotia for firefighters. And I found that hard to believe because it, in fact, is. And I told them in the Ripple, and they were shocked to know that somebody said it wasn't, but somebody was talking about an individual who was on a pension, retired, and only getting a small, if injury occurred, only got a small amount of money. Well, there's no loss in earnings. So the person was misinformed, and the consultants actually put that in their comments. So in any event, what I'm saying is a whole lot of words, but it's a whole lot of stuff happening. And, you know, my opinion is that we really do need to start to talk about it, because, you know, I think that the significance of this Municipal Government Act of 1999 got us into the document that Chris was looking at, which was registering fire departments. And the may and the shall, and you know, we just took it on to make sure that properties, ratepayers, the services were being provided, and we have worked all along to make it better, standardization of things, and quite proud of it actually to be in MODL. But now this change is huge, and you know, I'm hoping that we get a dialogue going and we were able to start talking about this, because, you know, fire departments are looking at this and there's so many different ones. There's commissions and departments, there's societies, who's going, who's not going, municipality going to take it over. It does clearly say that, you know, municipalities fund municipally-led fire services in Nova Scotia, and that is an easy statement for maybe the government to make. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it's a bit scary. And I also want to make a comment that I think that change can be good and that it can make things better. They're looking at standardization of services, standard services across the areas of jurisdiction, so that maybe, you know, response times can be laid out, the kind of coverage that you get maybe can be laid out. So there's some good things that maybe can happen from that. But you know, they're talking about the funding is 100% by the municipality. And when you start talking those kind of things, they said fundraising can continue. But, you know, fundraising is done differently here. We don't do any in our fire department. You'll find that the towns do less of that than rural. Because when, the equipment in the commission that I represent, the town and the district buy the gear. We run the operation, we pay for the operating costs, and we pay for the vehicles. And in the municipality's fire departments, the volunteers, if they want to get a truck, a lot of times they do a lot of fundraising for that truck. And you know, who's going to fundraise a truck if, you know, where's the money really going if the municipality is going to buy the trucks? So I just think it's a whole, it's just enough information out there to be confusing, Alex. I want you to smile. Good. Because it is very scary, and these documents got me hardly that I can sleep at night, you know, wondering like what's going to take place. And you know, I think that we need to work together to get on this and start looking at this as from the perspective of what you really know and what we think we know, that we kind of start moving along in a way, be it through workshops or whatever. But you know, the kind of change that it looks as here is, it will not be the same as what it is right now. And that is almost hard for me to imagine, that kind of a change in the fire service, like that significant. It's community-based, people are volunteers. I just think that there's so much in here. And what I'm going to do is, Chris, you've got these probably, do you? Maybe the members of this committee, we can at least circulate those documents to the members of this committee so that you can see what I'm talking about. I really got it added to the agenda, but didn't send anything in to be copied because I really wasn't sure how I was going to go about talking about it because, I believe in making things better, and there may be that in here, but making it better at the expense of somebody else or something else is not necessarily the best way to go. So, I've always believed in the fire service in the municipality, and we've done so many things here to make it better. And I'd like to see that continue, but I don't know where this will end at all. So, Alex, I'm open for some words from you. Yes, Alex, sure. In fact, the comment is everybody here is waiting for you. You have the...
Okay. Well, I guess I would say that... excuse me. Thanks. I would say that there have been many fire service reviews in Nova Scotia, and many of them have resulted in no changes whatsoever. The current government, however, has undertaken a number of significant reviews. So they have a fire service review going on, emergency services, ground search and rescue. They initiated significant changes in policing. So they've indicated a strong willingness to undertake major changes in protective services. And I think, excuse me, there's just a baby in the house, and I was worried it was being distracting. It was certainly distracting me.
We don't want you distracted, Alex.
What has been proposed by the consultants, you are absolutely correct, is a significant change in how our fire service would be structured. So rather than having independent organizations that would raise your hand and indicate, yes, we want to register as a fire service provider, and then essentially organizing the fire service as they see fit, it would be a total change. So it would be municipalities are responsible for providing the fire service, and the fire service has to meet certain standards. So it would take away a lot of that local autonomy, the local control over the fire service. We as a group have been collectively working towards creating some minimum standards for fire service, yes, and incorporating those in our registration policy.
Yes.
So that in and of itself is not a bad thing, but we've been working at it collaboratively in a way that has not been disruptive to the volunteer fire service. Because I think the part that can't be forgotten is that the biggest resource that we have in the fire service is those 600 plus volunteers.
Exactly.
And if they're not bought in to the changes, then we are going to erode the most significant resource that we have.
Yes.
So the changes that take away a lot of that autonomy without providing too much certainty in terms of how those volunteers fit in there and how their contributions are used and valued, it's a significant concern. We have heard from the province and from the consultants that this report is saying back what the fire service said they wanted. And so I do think that there's an important role for fire departments at this point, both individually and as Lunenburg Regional. If you see concerns in there, speak up both to the consultants at any engagement opportunities that you have, but also directly to your MLA to let them know that this is not actually what the fire service asked for. I think that there's a level to which municipalities may or may not be able to have influence. We're having, as I mentioned, all of these changes brought down through provincial legislation with varying levels of consultation, but it's all under the framework of these changes are happening and we might change some of the language that goes in the regulations. So to date, as far as I know, we haven't seen any of the draft legislation, but we are seeing the signs coming from the consultants that they are talking about significant change in the structure, getting rid of commission structures, getting rid of independent fire service organizations, making them essentially creatures of the municipality, and then having the municipality ensure that minimum standard of fire service is met, regardless of where the fire service is currently.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't really have a question, but I would like a copy of that.
Yes, I will.
If I could get one.
I'll get those.
I can send them out to everybody.
Yeah, there was.
Oh, that'd be great, Chris. Thank you. I'd just like to read it.
5 pages of documentation that is, it really, you know, when you really look at it, it really, it's just so significant that I just can't even imagine, you know, what administratively the MODL would look like in it, and where the people on the outside, where the department fits in it. If it's, it would be a department of the municipality, presumably. And then I can see standards. That's pretty easy. You can have standards even now that you know, that some people may be opting out of certain things in delivering the service right now. But if they have to provide it, then manpower and equipment would have to be provided to make sure that they could provide that type of response. So, yeah, it really is kind of. So you think we need to MLA this thing? You think that it's a political, he's got a supermajority, and the minister at that meeting, she said, we're going to make this happen. She made it very clear, and, you know, wasn't interested really in our opinions on the documents that they actually left at the table. It was almost like they left them there, but we didn't discuss them at all, actually. We talked about answering the questions. There was a sheet on table questions, and they did go through all of those, because that, in fact, was the information the consultants were looking for, the answers to those questions about moving forward in this. And then we would pop up the question, you know, there was no answer to them. Is commissions gone? No. Is society's gone? Is you really? They just almost ignored that, because there was really, it was not part of what they were there to talk about, actually. So it was, you know, everybody, they did say, in fact, when it was all over, that they came there expecting that we would be the worst group to deal with, and we, in fact, they said was the best. And they came from the valley just before that. I think they had one in Kentville. So, yes?
The problem that I saw and heard from a lot of the areas is there's such a very low uptake from the fire service. Like, the number of fire departments in the province, they didn't even know how many there were in the province when they first started this. Like,
really?
The premier or never said, how many fire departments do we have? Well, nobody could answer the question. They didn't know exactly how many fire departments they actually had, right? Or how many firefighters they had. They had, because their data collection has never been that great. So that was one issue, but the uptake from fire service itself is very poor. So unless the fire service, like Alex says, comes to the table and starts saying, hey, this is not what we really asked for, then this is going to probably go through a lot easier, because they think that's how it is. And you know, like the first meeting that Emily and I attended virtually, there was very few people that attended that. I was to one of the regional meetings in Shelburne, and there was 3 departments from Lunenburg County and hard, nobody from another county that's close by. It was like all those fire departments from Chester to Yarmouth, there was like 15 fire departments in the room out of all those volunteer and town fire departments. It was just amazing. Like, and then decisions are going to be made, and they're going to say, well, we didn't have an input. Well, you have to have an input. Even if they already may have some things decided, I don't know.
Yes.
Anyway, that's really important that, you know, fire services has to make their situation known and how they feel, and see how it goes from there, I guess.
Yeah, it's certainly an angle that we've never done. We've always worked with the municipality to deliver, not on the outside of it, kind of looking, saying that we now need to look at the politicians. He's, you know, they have this particular government has a supermajority, meaning that, you know, if, no matter others may say.
I think that being said, but they bit off a really big piece of pie, and I don't know if they're going to be able to swallow all of it, because it's huge what they're doing.
Well, even the cost of it, I mean, there's you know, they're talking about maybe the, I can see what happens within the municipality and certain things, but they're looking at, you know, they talked about training, and certainly at that particular session that I was at, that most people felt, and there were, I think, 8 MODL departments there, by the way, felt that, you know, the province needs to fund volunteer training. And then you got to make it accessible, regionalize it so that you can get people dealt with. I mean, they're putting their time into it. And, you know, we talked about a lot of stuff, but I'm not sure that the implications, because they, consultants, there is information, but I'm not sure that it sinks in and they understand it.
Yeah, like the training side's another side that they really, it's a critical thing right now, because there's nobody in the province to do training. And you know, Lunenburg Region is lucky, because we have some key people that are doing training. And then they're bringing people in from BC to do training, to train instructors that are paying, you know, decent funds for that. And they're going to have people certify them. And it's just a really clumsy process right now, where they're bringing another company from outside Nova Scotia to train people, when we have people in our own province that could train people to that same standard.
Right.
And pay them inside their own province, right? Like, anyway, it's not really organized from what I see.
No, when I read these when I got home, these papers, and it's then that I got stirred up about. So I think, Martin, you had a question, and I've been going on and on.
I just want to say, for the record, municipal councillors were never ever asked their opinion. They had the opportunity through FNSM to do site studies, take us aside, make a presentation. But since this has been underway, we've had three meetings where they never said a peep. We heard rumors that things was going on. And then if you go back four meetings, when they had the table of ministers there, questions was asked if there was going to be any changes. Oh, we don't know. It could happen, but we're not sure. So it seemed like there was secrecy. And now that the process is underway, the people that it affects the second most don't even have the opportunity to ask questions.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure you understood that we weren't part of the conspiracy.
Well, I didn't coming in here tonight. I really didn't know where MODL really stood. I don't think anybody from the fire service knew that you had not much of a different meeting than what we were called to. It looks, you know, from your side or our side, it's only really one side providing fire service to ratepayers. But when you look at this, it's huge. And, you talked about, Alex, about, you know, services and, you know, wanting standardization and, you know, what they talked about. And that's all fine if you need to make that happen. But all of this is downloading or up putting us to the municipality and putting the clamps on the municipality that they have to provide fire service. And I guess maybe to say about what's happening out there, I think that, you know, FSANS, you know, did get a study done, and I did attend one of the meetings. And I like to listen before I talk and understand. But I told you what I heard at those things, and then those things appear in the study. And, you know, the consultant that came to the table that we were at in Liverpool on that Saturday and, you know, had no idea even how many fire service coordinators there were in the province and what municipalities that were at what level. How many municipalities got the fire department that they're not even funding and they're expecting them to fundraise? Is it just one department in the whole province, or is it one municipality with 20 departments doing that? Like, you, there was no information about anything, because I'm not sure that they had that kind of information or tried to formulate from the discussion, you know, and then say, well, that's really kind of, is that really true? Would be my question. I'd want to check that out, because that information may or may not, in fact, be true. Some people like to exaggerate, things. And obviously the uptake of people participating in this was not like it should have been. We kind of got to a place where through this that we maybe didn't make a big contribution, but it was none of these gatherings, even the ones that they did in the summer, I felt were in any way looking for you to, you know, pound your fist down and rant and rave about fire service. It was about, you know, what's a few little, what's wrong, can it, you know, and that kind of thing. So in any event, not that we want to make this the longest meeting that we've ever had, I just wanted to bring these points up because I was at the last LRFES meeting, it just hit me. And then Corey, Chief Sink from Oak Hill, he said, well, have a look at this. And I looked at the screen and you could see on their legislative changes. And then he says, you know, you better get to a meeting. And I go home and jump on the computer and there was an invitation sheet that had been sent out, but only for chiefs and deputy chiefs and didn't include me. Well, I thought I would just go online and register anyway. And I attended with the hat on so nobody would see who I was. Not really. But I attended and they didn't mind it. And we had great discussion at our table. But the documents, when you got home, documents that they never even talked about at the meeting that they did circulate. And I picked them up. I grabbed them. Those documents is what got me going tonight for this and why I ask it to be discussed at this meeting. So it's no good to belabor the point, but I certainly think that together, this committee should be, we need to be talking about it as we go forward. We've got an annual meeting coming up, and I know that the fire service is going to be looking for a little bit of information. And there has been two sessions for February. I think the 10th and the 12th of February. The 12th is in Bridgewater at the fire station for commissions, and it's at 5:30 to 7:30, and there's one online on the February the 10th. So they at least are looking at offering up to commissions what their plan is with that. So I suspect it may in fact be the same thing that we may have seen because we weren't supposed to be at the other meetings. So. In any event, I think there's a lot of challenges ahead for fire services if this government is going to do what it's doing. And, you know, because it's not looking at things in a manner with the facts or the reality of things, it seems to me. So, yes.
I'm just wondering if there's any, on the roadmap.
Yes.
Is there anything suggesting, you know, more information to be released or, Alex, I don't know if the municipality has been given any, you know, idea that they'll have a heads up about what's coming. I think that,
Yeah. So to answer your question, so I think, Emily, you're understanding some of this here on the training side of it, aren't you? Like the fire, there was a Fire and Safeties Act introduced in October of 2025. And I understand that the changes, Alex, correct me if I'm wrong, also looks at fire inspection buildings and things is part of this, isn't it? It's other things besides fire services, isn't it? Fire inspection, I think. Is that... Alex, I don't hear you.
Yeah, the okay. October 2025 bill, yes, but this isn't. This is proposing new legislation.
Yes.
And in terms of further information to come, so there was an emergency management meeting discussion scheduled last week for 2 days, and they added in some fire service discussion components to it, and Chris attended there. What I understand from Chris is that we had similar types of discussions where there was some information provided, but it didn't provide the details of what the changes precisely would be. Although it is certainly conveying the impression that the legislative change will change the may to a shall.
Yes.
In the Municipal Government Act. So municipalities will be required to provide fire service. They'll be required to meet a certain standard. And then it will change the structure of many of the volunteer fire departments. But we don't know exactly what that is. And while the municipality has talked for quite some time now with this group about how we do see the need for improvements, that we need to work together to do it, this sort of top-down approach is quite concerning for us.
Yes.
So I just check in with Chris. Did they provide any timelines or further information during the meetings last week?
I was there on Thursday, so that's when they talked a little bit about the fire service side, and they had the exact same question and the exact same timeline that Brian has here tonight. Exactly, everything was the same in the roadmap. No discussion on legislation or anything that's coming or when, just that there's change coming. And the consultants walked around the room doing the same thing as they did at all the other meetings. And I think at one of the Remo tables, there was questions directed to some of the different consultants that came around. It was sometimes a different consultant that came and they asked questions for clarification, and they got different answers and responses from the same questions that they asked. So they came away even more cloudy for clarity than what they had asked for on some of the questions they asked for. And many of the CEOs that were there were just as frustrated and confused as the fire services and we are here tonight, because there's no real clear guidance or what changes are going to come for sure, other than what's been discussed by the consultants at the meetings and when they discuss things. So
if it just rammed through, you'll get whatever you get on the other end of this thing, which is going to be dangerous for all of us. So Emily, I was saying the FTAC committee holds first meeting, which is this new training, which is part of the Fire Safety and Services Act that was introduced, right? That's what I understand. It was part of that.
I think that's where
it came from, right? According to this roadmap. Okay.
But the training, the FTAC committee, so I sat on their first two or three meetings they've had, and it's at the same point, like, they say they're filling in the gaps and they're doing stuff to help in the interim until they figure out who's going to do the training, how it's going to be delivered. But until this last information that came out that they were using different places in BC and stuff like that, there was no real indication on how or who was going to deliver fire training in the province at this point. And the areas that were doing training, they said were going to be supported on how they deliver the training and to keep doing what they were doing, but there was no real supports put in place to assist areas like our areas and other areas in the province that are doing level one programs fully with volunteer staff, where other areas in the past used to have trained staff that would go out and do that training. So if the help is there, I'm not sure where it is yet, and what's going to take place, I'm not sure. So
I'll just say that we're still waiting for the interim training plan that was promised, I believe, in, I want to say August or September. So we're still waiting for the interim training plan, let alone...
From this FTAC committee?
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. Let alone anything actually like a roadmap to what's going to be expected of firefighter training in Nova Scotia going forward. We're still waiting for the stopgap measure to help us out since the province cut their relationship with the fire school back in May.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think, Dean, you had a question?
They're really moving quick on this because they're planning to have this, by the sounds of things, fully implemented by 2029. I believe it is.
Yes, March of 2029 but the legislation will be presented, tabled in September of 26.
Yes.
So that means that they'll have a draft document that is going to be tabled for legislation.
And that's only 6 months away. Things are going to happen here quick. And
they're going to serve in September of 26. They're going to serve a 12-month notice to municipalities that this is the way it's going to be.
Some of the questions we had, like in our department, where we're commissioned.
Yes.
The commission actually owns the fire department, build the building at the hall itself. So they dissolve that. Who actually owns the building?
Well, assets and liabilities.
Does the municipality? Does the fire department
loans,
take it over?
Right? Loans or cash or investments. It's really quite complex.
It's a lot.
But there's a meeting on February the 12th.
We'll be there.
Yeah.
Somebody will be there.
Okay.
But it's a lot of questions for the commissions that it's not answered.
No. It's a lot of questions about a lot of
everything
that really isn't answered. It's kind of scary what they're doing.
Because last year at the FSANS conference, they kind of come out and gave us a little blurb. Yes, we're going to do a thing on fire service. But I think it was well on its way by the time that came to the, like, in the background before it actually come to the conference to let us know. they were well working on it at that point, I'm sure.
So I'm asking a question, Chris. Is things really in the rest of the Nova Scotia world in fire service, are they worse off than we are here? Are there that many departments that are like that?
Some are.
Wow.
Some,
like,
I think we're...
I find that hard to
I think we're
understand,
probably,
right?
I wouldn't say we're at the top, but we're pretty darn close
yeah.
to that level of like where we're at with our training and stuff like that. And I'm really fearful that if they don't do something to help with the training and stuff, with like costing and all those things,
yes.
then we're going to lose what we have.
Yes.
And the trained and people that we have that are doing the training for us. And that's something that we really can't afford to lose.
Well, if they break up these organizations that have existed for 70, 80, 90 years in the municipality of Lunenburg, there'd be no fundraising. You're lucky to get someone to take a call.
I mean,
you may have to have paid firefighters.
Yeah,
it's an extreme, but wow, like it's just way out there.
Like we were actually noted in one of the documents that came out from, I don't know, was at that meeting in Truro or was one prior to that, with they did the CBRM chief and Paul Maynard did a presentation, and they're kind of the two top dogs in the FTAC community right now, I think. And putting presentations and stuff that consultants put together. And Lunenburg County is the second of the, and pretty much in the province as far as like where they are with their level of training and what they're providing right now, and what we have in the area for like props and things
yeah.
for level one training and instructors that we have.
Yes.
I mean, Emily and Andy Wenzel, I mean, put a lot of this together.
Yes, I know
and we were one of the few departments that are doing a level one program at the level that we're doing it at during this mess that we're in.
Yes.
So if they don't smarten up, then we're going to lose some of that. And we really can't afford to lose that.
No. But, you know, if they're continuing on the path that they appear to have laid out for us, we're in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, the minister, or the deputy minister, she's the one that's at most of the meetings. The minister is there when she can be. The minister of municipal affairs, he's there. To several of the meetings also, but the deputy minister seems to be the one that's like kind of taking the
yes,
ball and running
that's
with it. And, you know, we had that question there, like, what are some of the roadblocks? And,
yes.
And we said, well, fire services didn't ask for a lot of these things.
No.
And when that question came up at the table and the minister heard that, she got a funny look on her face and she said, well, this is what fire services wants and that's what we're going to give them.
Yes.
And they, you know, everybody around the room just kind of, I'm not really sure where the information's coming from, but it is kind of worrisome because I know the municipalities and the CEOs in that room on Thursday did not want this change.
No.
People say, yes, there's some good things that could come out of it, like some of if the training
yes,
comes
I
in.
Yes, I think that there is.
And
but,
standards come in, but
man. You're going to lose a lot of people, but you want anybody to train.
And not just that, the added cost it's going to cause fire services when they do some of this stuff, right? And the municipalities, if they do that, because the standard's going to drive cost and
yeah.
stuff too, right? So
yeah. But worse, when you put standards in place and you get rid of all the organizations that are out there, what do you've got left of anybody?
That act that was introduced there in last October or whatever it was.
Yes.
I think it also actually says that the volunteer fire service is going to be more into the Occupational Health and Safety Act than what it is in the past, too.
I'm sorry. I'm caught up.
That's all right. I haven't seen any of these documents, not the new ones or the ones from last year. But I'm immediately concerned, you know, when we talk about taking these out of being community organizations, how are they planning to keep people volunteering? Like, how do you download it onto municipalities? And municipalities have to provide a certain level of service. And then we look at the volunteers and go, okay, you're working Sunday 2 to 4. Like, how does that roll down? Is there any conversation about changing to a paid service or
no
honorariums or anything at all to try and get these people to stay on board?
No.
Whew. Wow.
Leave it to the government to, you know.
Wow.
Just to give a little, like the consultants, some of them are from Ontario. I think that's where most of them come from, Ontario,
yes,
Alberta.
Yes, they were.
And they've been doing this change, and they've been in it 20 years now. And they're still not, they're like advanced in some of the things they're bringing forward here, kind of the same kind of concepts. But it's taken them 20 years to get there, not. Not in a short period of time. Like, there's just no possible way that you can reconfigure a fire service in the province and the municipalities in a short term. It's a long-term process, and it has to have buy-in from everybody and funding somehow. It's just not an easy fix,
but
right?
You could, Chris, have changed a shell to a may in the Municipal Government Act and then work with the structures you had and then have standards, right?